Hello and welcome to Dishing Up. I'm Millie.
And I'm Mariam. We're part of Larder, a magazine where we believe who you are is what you eat.
In this series, we're going to take you on a food tour around the world.
In each episode, we'll be choosing a new country to focus on and speaking to renowned chefs from that country about their earliest memories of cooking and what makes their food so delicious.
Come with us on this journey to learn about traditional food from all corners of the globe. We'll be going to places like the Gambia, Azerbaijan, Mexico, and Malta. Leave behind everything you know about food. We're headed off the beaten track.
So grab a knife and a fork, because this is Dishing Up. Today, we are embarking across the pond to the very beautiful and very warm Venezuela. Situated right at the top of the large South American continent, Venezuela is home to beautiful landmarks like the Northern Andean Mountains and Lake Maracaibo, the largest lake in South America, as well as 1,700 miles of coastline surrounding the Caribbean Sea.
Venezuela was colonized by Spain in the 16th century, where their colonial economy was based on its agriculture. Corn, beans, and beef were the domestic food staples, while sugar, cacao, and tobacco were the main exports, making food a very big part of the country's history. By the early 19th century, it was one of the first Spanish-American territories to declare independence. Now the country is known for its large oil reserves and bright culture.
Venezuelan food is reflective of the different influences from Europe, West Africa, the Caribbean, as well as their indigenous population. They're more famously known for arepas, a thick corn or flour tortilla filled with cheese, meat and vegetables, as well as other staples like corn, rice, plantains, yams and beans. Its national dish is pabellón criollo, a stew made with juicy shredded beef, black beans and fried plantains.
Calling from New York today is Mercedes Golip. Mercedes grew up in Caracas, the capital of Venezuela, before moving to Miami and finally settling in New York, where she works as a food creative. She is self-taught, inspired to take up cooking as a way to battle her homesickness.
Whilst her dishes don't adhere to the classic Venezuelan traditions, she instead creates dishes with classic foundations, reinvented and influenced by the context of other cuisines. If she's not in the kitchen, she spends time planting her own herbs and heirloom tomatoes, as well as working as a food consultant where she does food styling and recipe developing for other blogs and websites.
Mercedes hosts Venezuelan-inspired pop-up dinners and cooking classes to spread the word about her love for the cuisine. These projects showcase her love for fresh ingredients and the importance of buying locally. She is committed to sustainability. Specifically, she is interested in showcasing the delicious and biodiverse different types of corn.
Mercedes, welcome to Dishing Up. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm well. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're good. We'll start off. Could you first tell us about your earliest memories of food?
Well, I started cooking at a very young age. I have always been really curious. First of all, I used to be a picky eater. So I think cooking and getting into cooking also got me into eating better. I was very curious from a young age at like how like things were made, especially sweets. I'm a big fan of biscuits, cookies. So I started that way. I think that was my gateway to the kitchen. And then in my home, my mom always cooked. We were really into like eating at home. And I think that was something that like was very important for me from a young age. And then I got into a relationship with my boyfriend, my current husband, and he also likes eating. And he's even, I think, more curious than I am. So that also fueled the whole thing around food.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, that sounds really nice. And it's great that you have such a connection with your partner through food.
Yeah. And Mercedes, was it your mum that first taught you how to cook?
I mean, she actually like never taught me how to cook. I think it was just like watching and kind of trying to help how I learned to do things and asking questions. And like my mom was always very independent in the kitchen. So I think in a way I also got that like I love hosting, but I don't like being helped. So I love taking cooking classes. Like every time I travel, like even in my own city, I always try to find like what is the dish of that place and like how can I get into a class and learn about it.
Oh, that's really interesting. And can you tell us a bit about your current job? So you're a food creative. What does that entail?
Well, my main job is in marketing. So my food project is actually my creative outlet and something that I do on the side, but it has been a very successful project. It has taken a lot of attention, I think, because the work with corn is it's growing, and I have been trying to look back to the way Venezuelans used to make their arepas, which is the main corn bread that we eat. And so I have been doing both things at the same time. Also, the cooking side project has also been influenced a lot by I'm a gardener and I like growing my own food. So I think that I'd be privileged to have both things on my side and on my path in a way that I can almost like choose what I grow and what I eat. And so I think like I coined myself a food creative because it's more than cooking. I think it's about learning about traditions, about food, about farming, and like deepen that connection with food and how food comes to us and how we consume food too.
Oh, that's amazing. And just piggybacking off of that, Mercedes, what does food mean to Venezuelans?
Well, we have a real connection with food. And I think arepas, if you ask a Venezuelan, like outside of Venezuela, well, in Venezuela, of course, like I think you take things for granted. As an immigrant, I think like not having access to like the native ingredients and losing that food connection of like going to places or going to a family gathering. Like, I think for me, I can take a look at that more as an immigrant. I have been out of Venezuela for 18 years now. So I think my lens is more through the eyes of an expat and how I have tried to keep that connection with the native ingredients, with the dishes that are important to me, and trying to recreate all of that almost by like memory and like sensory memory, trying to remember flavors. I think that has been like, I don't know, one of the things that keep me connected with my culture, even though I'm so far away. And I think a lot of people from Venezuela that are out of the country have the same longing for the things that we miss. So that has been I think is the main connection that personally I have with my country and with my food. It's just trying to, if I cannot find the things that are important to me here, it's just how I try to recreate the flavors, even with like different ingredients, how I try to recreate those dishes so they don't fall into like how do we lose the traditions and how we don't forget how to make things and we don't lose the, that's one of the things why I have been like very, it's been very important to me to try to rescue that tradition of the arepa, like even though like I'm not trying to go back to, I don't know, the old ages of not having technology or anything. It's just trying to rescue that because I think this generation has an important role in not letting things go into history and trying to preserve like some of those traditions, and of course looking at the traditions from a modern lens. And I think I covered that.
Yeah, you really did. Could you tell us a little bit about arepas and how they're made?
Well, arepas are the main ingredient to make arepas is corn. In Venezuela, we use two different processes to make them. One is a mechanical process where the dry maize gets pounded and mashed, and you remove the skin of the seed to make a smooth masa. Then you cook, well, of course, you cook that corn, you grind it, and you make it into a smooth masa. We mostly use white and yellow corn in the grain stage when it's dry. There's another process that goes through a chemical solution, an alkaline solution, and it's a way to wash and clean the corn to remove that skin, but in a chemical way. So what the alkaline solution does is that it softens that skin and unlocks all the nutritious quality of the seed. I think that's the process that I prefer for a lot of reasons. There's a lot of nutrition value that you get out of cooking the corn that way. Also, it has a very deep and I won't say smoky, it could get smoky, but it has a very intense flavor that you don't get if you don't cook the corn in that alkaline solution. So what happens after that is that you process the softened corn through a mill, and you get a masa that you have to work with your hands and add water. And then you shape the arepas into rounded patties. And depending on where you are from, like arepas can be like very thin. They can be cut open when they're ready and stuffed with different fillings. They can also be stuffed when they're raw and fried. And yeah, they are very versatile cornbread.
Mercedes, I'm curious, is there a large Venezuelan population where you are?
Well, right now I'm in New York in the countryside, so there's not a large population here. But in the United States, there's a growing Venezuelan population, especially in big cities. Miami, New York, Texas, I think that's where most of the concentration is at the moment.
And then how does Venezuelan cuisine differ from like neighboring countries?
We have different regions and microclimates within Venezuela. So Venezuelan food is actually regionally, it's kind of like different, like among, within itself. In Caracas, where I'm from, the cuisine tends to be like kind of sweet and savory. That's like a combination that you can find almost like on almost all the stews. We use a lot of ají dulce. I think that's like maybe the main thing that differentiate us from like, because we have Caribbean roots, but our food is not Caribbean food. Leans a lot into like spices and heat, and our cuisine is more sweet, I think. But also, if you look at the cuisine in the Andes, you have more wheat. They use more potatoes. They have a really nice biodiversity and different ingredients than the rest of the country. But then, just to resume that, I think just for a Caribbean country, our food is on the sweeter side. And one thing that I think distinguished us is the use of ají dulce. It's a chili pepper, but it's a sweet chili pepper, and it's on everything. It's like you can smell as a Venezuelan stew and immediately identify that it's like a floral, a little bit funky flavor. I don't know if in your like flavor or taste memory you have like the idea of habanero, but if you remove all the spice of the habanero, you get like all these floral notes and sweet notes that are very tasty. So ají dulce, it's a native pepper from Venezuela, and that's something that pre-Hispanically that was something that got developed by the native peoples. One other thing that it's very present in our food is the cassava, and we make a bread that it's called cassave, and it's made with yuca flour. And that's something I think very unique to Venezuela.
Oh, interesting. Could you tell us, sort of following that line, what one ingredient is that you couldn't live without?
I think both ají dulce and corn are the two things that I cannot live without. Ají dulce, because it's in every single stew that I make, even if it doesn't call for it, I think I'll add it just out of like custom. And corn, because there I wouldn't have a way to make the arepa.
Oh, that's amazing. When we were doing research for the podcast, you know, we did see that corn was one of not only one of the big Venezuelan ingredients, but something that you focus on a lot. So what is it that about corn that, you know, interests you so much?
Well, it all started when I started teaching the cooking classes. One of the things that I was teaching was how to make arepas, but I was using the pre-cooked packaged flour, which is, I think, what most Venezuelans use. And during one of those sessions, one person that wasn't Venezuelan asked me, like, "But okay, we're making this from this flour, but how can you make this from scratch?" So that question to me was a breaking point, I think, in my process, because it was actually a great question I couldn't answer. And that, I say, was a breaking point because I, in that moment, I thought, like, how could I not know how to make this if this is the main thing that I eat, if I eat this weekly? How is it possible that I have no idea how to, like, if this package of flour disappears today, what am I going to do? So then I started, like, asking around, like, so what is that ingredient that I'm missing here? How can I, like, how do I cook it? How do I mill it? Like, so I think that moment of discovery and that moment of questioning was so beautiful to me because it led me on a complete different path. And I think, like, I don't know how it was in your area during the pandemic, but here everyone was making sourdough. And during the pandemic, I made the point of, like, I have to really, like, dig into this and learn how to make it and master it. So before the pandemic, I was already doing it, but I think it was during that time that I really committed to, okay, I'm going to put the flour aside. I'm not going to use this anymore. And especially because, like, there's another conversation in terms of, like, the kind of corn that flour uses and the kind of processes that in the agriculture aspect that, like, you know, it's another conversation. But I think having that moment of realization that I really want to learn about this and that path has taken me to, like, meet a lot of interesting people, and looking at corn from a bunch of different perspectives, like how do you cook it, how do you grow it, what are the different types of corns that you can find, and how also how beautiful it is, how this whole American continent is connected from the north of the continent all the way to the south, from Canada to Argentina. Like every single country has a dish that is important to that country, and that corn is represented in every single country. Especially if you look at Mexico, I think they are the ones that have kept this tradition going in a very important way for their culture. And they have, like, they are hands-on on the biodiversity preservation. And that got me really inspired on, like, thinking how can I contribute to Venezuelan culture in terms of, like, how our relationship with these ingredients.
And is it right that you're in New York at the moment?
Yeah.
So how do you get the most authentic ingredients possible?
Well, authenticity, I don't think has always been my thing. I try to look at my food from like the context where I'm at. So pretty much my process has been like, if I cannot find a dulce, what is the blend of peppers that can get me to that flavor? I don't like getting stuck on like not finding something and not doing the dishes that I want to eat because I cannot find that. I think it's a reality of our modern lifestyle, like immigration, global warming, even the cost of living. Like, how can you, within your context, like make the best out of your options? And get to the flavors or get to the quality of food that like you are content with. So it's been about experimenting. Like I'm sure that here I cannot find like well, it's recent that ají dulce is more available, but before I was just like blending different types of peppers to get that similar flavor. With corn, I know that I'm not going to find Venezuelan corn, but like you can actually make arepas with any kind of dry corn. So I think that has opened up more my vision of what the dish is and how can I adapt it to the context more than trying to long for something that I don't have or... you know, I don't know. I just don't like to get stuck in the past. I rather just look at things through a futuristic modern lens and see how I can adapt the things that I like to the context where I'm at.
And we know from doing our research about you, sustainability is something that you pride yourself in. So what do you do to maintain a sustainable kitchen?
Well, living now in like part-time in the countryside has been a privilege to get to meet the actual food producers. I'm living most of my time in an area where most of the farms are at, and most of the food that is produced for the city comes from this area. So buying directly from producers and getting to know them, getting to know their struggles, getting to know what they do, how they do it, and yeah, trying to support them and be part of that community. I have also engaged with people like that are seed breeders and are into the genetics of things. So also participating in different work groups and workshops on like how to produce food that it's or seeds that are prepared for our climate change like trying to be the most sustainable that I can be, trying to learn like how to grow my own food, how to, and also like trying to involve people in these practices. Like it's not like, I think like even if you live in the city, I lived in the city for 10 years and I had a little balcony with my own herbs. And two things, that was for one, on one side, very satisfying, like to get your own food from a balcony, from a windowsill. And two, like you spend less money on those things that sometimes go to waste. Trying to involve people, I think, has been one of the things too that like keeps me going on this, like trying to spread the word on like the most satisfying thing of growing a tomato plant and getting your own tomatoes, even if they're like little cherry tomatoes. Motivating people to do all those things that I love.
That sounds so wholesome.
Yeah, that's incredible, Mercedes. Do you mind telling us a bit about your favorite traditional dish from Venezuela?
Let's see. I love hallacas. It's a very complex dish. If I had to explain to you what an hallaca is, it's think of tamal. It's the same concept of a corn bone. So you wrapped in a banana leaf. It's topped with a very tasteful stew. And I feel that this is the dish that in a way most represent Venezuelans. This is mostly eaten for Christmas. In the modern days, like I have read that in the past, it used to be something widely available at any time of the year, but now it's mostly during the holidays. What I think it's very unique about hallacas is that it's a celebratory dish. It's something that you make surrounded by friends and family. Also, every family has their own recipe. And I find that very, cute. That if you ask a Venezuelan, like every single person will tell you that the best hallacas are made by their moms. And I find that to be a beautiful tradition and a beautiful dish. It's a very complex dish that I think has a mix of every ingredient that like has been inserted into our culture from like different ethnicities. Like you have the banana leaf wrap, you have the corn masa, you have a savory stew that has raisins and has olives and has capers. So it's a very unique combination of like what I think our culture is now these days. It's just a mix of all the different historic processes that happen in the country.
That sounds really delicious. I think both of our mouths are watering at the moment. And what's a dish from Venezuela you wish more people knew about?
I think it's hallacas. I think here, like Venezuelans that are setting up restaurants have the hallaca now available. Not only for Christmas, but you can see some restaurants serving hallacas any day of the year. It's a quite difficult dish to make, not because it's difficult in itself, but it requires a lot of steps, and you have to make the stew, you have to make the masa, you have to wrap them. So I think it just for the complexity is something like that when you make it, it's meant to be shared. And even the making process, I feel that it's something also very wholesome. And like you gather with your friends and family, and you chat, you listen to music, you drink, and then within that process, you make the hallaca.
So in that way, I think the context of the food is just as important as the food itself.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mercedes, for this part of the podcast, we'd like you to imagine you're preparing a dinner party menu full of your favourite Venezuelan dishes. So what are you having for your starter, your main, your dessert and to drink?
Okay, yeah. For a starter, I would serve tequeño. I haven't mentioned that before, but these are like these little cheese sticks. It's a salty cheese wrapped in like this very thin wheat dough, and then they are deep fried. There's no Venezuelan party without tequeño, and I think in Venezuela you can tell if it's a good party by the quality of the tequeños and how fast they go. Next, I would serve something that I have been serving in my pop-ups, which is a masa bowl soup. It's a play on the traditional matzo bowl soup. The difference is that instead of a matzo bowl, I serve it with a little masa bowl that is inspired by a Venezuelan dish called bollos pelones, which is a clean, it's a corn bun. It's boiling water, but it's also stuffed with a filling. It's usually minced meat, but for this dish, I use a shredded chicken. So it's all within the chicken soup. So you get a chicken soup with your little masa bowl and carrots, celery, and yeah, it's I really love that dish. The next one that I would serve in my pop-ups usually, it's a meat ravioli. But this meat ravioli, it's very special because it's a play on another traditional Venezuelan dish called pabellón, which is what we consider to be our national dish. Pabellón is it's a rice bowl with shredded beef, sweet fried plantains, black beans, and I think I'm not forgetting anything. Some people add also cheese. So my plate on this dish is it's a ravioli filled with that beef, shredded beef, and then served with cream of black beans and sweet plantain. And then for dessert, my favorite thing to serve is quesillo, which is our version of the flan. And sometimes I incorporate seasonal fruits to that custard. So just to make it part of the context.
That sounds absolutely delicious.
Yeah. And what are you having to drink?
Right now, for that dinner? Well, depending on the season, I usually make a spritz. One of my favorite ones was a shiso cucumber spritz that I make for a summer dinner party. And I could also make, there's a drink that we have if we want to go like to the alcoholic route called guarapita. It's usually made with a fruit juice. It's usually passion fruit, but I don't usually have passion fruit available. So I have made it with peach juice, strawberry juice, any seasonal fruit that I can see available. I think it would also be great with rhubarb or something like that if it's around this season.
Oh, I love that. Seasonal eating and drinking as well. It's really great. Well, Mercedes, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been so interesting.
Mercedes, where can people find you?
Well, I'm mostly active on Instagram. My Instagram is IamBananista. I also have a Substack newsletter. Also, with my name, you can find me at IamBananista. The newsletter is very occasional. I don't like flooding people's email, but I usually do like season transitions and tell people about like what's happening at the farm, what I'm planning to plant. If I have events, I will post it there. So yeah, that's where people can find me.
Amazing. And what's next for you? Have you got any fun projects coming up?
Oh yeah, I'm working with a group of cooks, and there's a seed breeder that now is doing tests with corn seed, and his goal is to develop a corn seed that can be grown in a short period of time. So that's thinking about like cold seasons here in North America. So we're going to gather and we're going to test an initial sample that it's what they're planning to plant this year for the season. And we're going to give feedback on like what we think are the use cases in food for that seed. And we're going to test different samples to see which one is the one that renders better. And depending on those tests, that is the seed that they're going to plant, and then we're going to retest it in the fall. So I'm very excited about that project.
As you should be. It's so interesting. I never really knew about that kind of stuff before. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Mercedes, for coming on Dishing Up today. We've had the most fun, and it's been so interesting to learn more about Venezuela, especially as it's a bit far from us. Yeah, thank you so much.
And finally, could you just sum up the cuisine of Venezuela in one word?
I would say sweet.
Sweet. Lovely.
That's gorgeous. Thank you so much, Mercedes.
Thank you so much for having me. This was also very fun for me. And thank you for letting me share this part of my culture.
Yeah, thank you for coming and sharing it with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Mercedes. We've been your hosts, Millie and Mariam.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Dishing Up.
Dishing Up is produced by Mariam Aziz, Millie Jackson and Hannah Rashbass, with technical support from Maria Martinez Ugarteche.
Special thanks to Biscuit Town for our fabulous jingle. Please join us again for another tasty episode on Dishing Up.
Until then, keep cooking.
And remember, who you are is what you eat.
Bye.